Well, I mean, how bad could it be, right?
I suppose we'll give it a whirl.
Yep.
All right. So welcome back to the Diecast Ranch. I am your host, Grant, also known as the Orange Track Farmer on TikTok and Instagram. And with me tonight is my wonderful co-host, Chris. Say hello, Chris.
Hello.
And we're glad to have you back on the podcast. This is episode number 2. We just appreciate everybody who downloaded the first one and wanted to listen to us talk about farming and Hot Wheels and get to know us a little bit. For following our socials, we are the Diecast Ranch on the TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube for right now. But yeah, we'd also appreciate any engagement, any thoughts you guys have on this crazy podcast that we're starting. You know, what you want to see, what you don't want to see. Drop us a comment, likes, shares, all that good stuff, and let us know what you want to hear from us over here at the Diecast Ranch. So with that said, Chris, what have you been up to this week?
Well, we've been doing the farming thing, and
I would expect nothing less.
I can't click my pen. I know, that's really loud. I click my pen way too much.
Yeah, we need to get, I got a bunch of those fidget spinners. We need, but those probably make noise too.
Yeah, we need the little poppet things that you
That makes way too much noise. But yeah, doing that farming thing, huh?
Yep, we're getting ready for it's been really nice weather here, and we've been clearing the trees and maintaining the fence lines, and it's been going really well. So it's been really dry. I wish it would do some raining, but can't control the weather.
We had a shot at some moisture earlier in the week, but it just didn't stick around.
Yeah, it rained for half the day, but I bet you could have counted the drops on the ground.
It was nothing, but I think there's a lot of guys cutting trees right now. I mean, I've been doing it.
Yep.
Why do you think that is? Just because there's nothing to do, but the weather's nice?
Like, well, normally, I mean, we're sitting here and we're going into coming out of winter. I mean, this time last year, we had feet of snow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was crazy. And now I have been working outside in a t-shirt all week. I mean, it's crazy. And it's dry, dusty. There's hardly any mud or moisture to stop anybody, so why not make use of the good weather, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's that thing that you put off doing until it gets bad. It's like, I'll do that someday, and well, today is someday. Like I said, the weather's nice, and usually we're just stuck inside right now, so you might as well get out and do something.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go clear them fence lines and stuff when you're buried in snow, and that's the first thing that catches the snow, so you know, the field might be clear and the road might be clear, but the fence line's how many feet deep? So it's kind of nice to be able to get out there. And I got a nice tree puller attachment for my skid loader, so I can just go right along there. And all the little brush and shrubs and just the stuff that's not really useful to anything, I mean, it's not, it's just annoyance vegetation, basically.
Well, it looks a lot better once you get it cleaned up.
Oh, you should see the project that I'm working on.
Oh, boy.
We're going to gain 6 rows of field.
That much?
Yeah, it's grown out that far.
Wow.
Because, I mean, it starts, the fence is still there, and so you get a couple of trees growing, and then they get bigger, and you start going out, and you start going further and further and further and further, and pretty soon you're like, wow, I'm like a long ways away from that.
Well, the trees get bigger. The more you know, some of those, what are they, like sugar maples, some sort of maple trees, they grow up so fast. You let them go for a year, and holy cow, they bush way out.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been fighting those, the ash trees?
Yep.
From that emerald ash borer that went around and killed them all, and they're, I mean, they really suck to take care of, because if they're dead, for one, I haven't found an alive one yet, but as soon as you touch them, they start breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they hit the ground, they just explode.
Well, yeah, you might have noticed walking into the house tonight to record this, all the sticks you could twist your ankle on. So we had 3 large ash trees right around my wife and I, right around our house here, and they have been dead for years. Like, so we were in the bucket trimming them, and you throw a branch to the ground, it would absolutely just shatter. Sticks everywhere. There's no moisture left in those things. So yeah, it's a bug or a worm? What is it? That's the borer? I'm assuming that's some sort of insect.
Emerald ash borer.
Okay.
is what I believe that it's called. It's, it, how I understand it, is it kind of burrows and tunnels between the bark and the wood of the tree, and it kills the tree.
Okay. All I know is that these three that we took down, massive trees, we counted the rings on the one, got to be close to 100 years old and just dead. Like, there's no life left in it. The wood still looks good, but you get towards the top, the branches were just falling apart. Yeah. No good whatsoever. So, yeah, it was a good time for us to get those out, for the one was leaning on towards the house pretty good. But, yeah, it's just a good time to get them out. The weather was nice. Not very often you're out there in just t-shirts in late February and early March.
Right, yeah, I know quite a few guys, or not quite a few, but I know some guys that are actually, it's March 9th today, I believe, and this last week they put anhydrous.
Wow.
And that is, or started to, and that's pretty early. I mean, I know we're not in that big of a hurry to start, but, I mean, if you can go, you can go.
Well, we had such a mild fall around here, so I feel like a lot of guys were in the field early, got the crop out, and had time to get that anhydrous down. But, I mean, yeah, if you decide to switch some bean acres to corn or something, you got time to do it. I mean, right. Things are still, the conditions are totally fine. How many times are we pretty soggy this time of year, whether it's melting snow or there's still snow on the ground?
No, it is very interesting. I mean, I know I had some shop projects and stuff that I was planning on doing this winter, and I don't know if we're going to get to them, because it's been so nice to get other outside projects done, you know, like this fence line clearing and stuff, and it's not really clearing, I guess you could call it that, but, you know, that's something that easily can get overlooked. You're like, oh, you know, that tree that started growing, I'll get him next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get him next year. And then pretty soon it's 2 feet around and you need a chainsaw.
You actually got to go out there and cut it, where you could have just hit it with the nippers or pulled it.
Yep.
Yeah. Now it's an actual whole tree. That's a nuisance. Tree.
Yeah. And then they always hang, you know, they go towards the sunlight, and so they hang over your field, and then you start getting rubbed up on your machinery, and you hit them with things. We got some members joining us in the, where, for those of you that are just listening, we're also doing this on YouTube Live, so
check us out over there at the Diecast Ranch. I'm just gonna keep saying that.
we got Garrett, he's in here, welcome. We got Andrew, welcome. And Jared, it looks like.
They all seem to know you.
They seem to know me. Have you met Grant?
I'm here too, guys. That's right. I'm the middle child. I'm used to being overlooked.
It's okay. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, but why don't we just dive right into the diecast part of this? Let's talk about today's car.
Yeah, so today's cast car. So something that I've been doing since I collect these Hot Wheels cars. I say Hot Wheels, but really there's Matchbox. There's a whole mess of other brands outside of Hot Wheels. But in general, most of my collection is Hot Wheels. I've actually been carrying a car in my pocket every day since January 1st of 2020. And I have them all in spreadsheets, so I know which ones I carried on which days, whether or not I still have it. I categorize them. It's probably a problem.
How like, many? January 1st.
January 1st of 2020. And I've carried a different car every day. Sometimes I do double up by accident, but I make a note of that in my spreadsheets. The only car I've carried for multiple days was on July 31st of 2021. I know that because that was my wedding day. I carried a car, and then we went on our honeymoon for like the next few days, and I carried the same car for 10 days. Otherwise, I've never repeated one. They've always been different. So I don't know why. It's just one of those things. You kind of start and you can't stop, and I'm collecting the cars anyways. So, just kind of been something I've been doing for a while. So today's pocket car, if you were wondering, is this 94 Toyota Supra. You might notice it's orange. It looks really familiar because it's the tuned version, so it's got some funky proportions to it. But it is the Supra from the first Fast and Furious movie. So it's the one that he jumps the train tracks with and Dom gets away with. They also made a tuned version of Dom's Charger, so you can kind of, it's kind of cool to put the two of them together. I've got that somewhere. I have boxes of cars. It's in there somewhere. I have no idea where, but I know I carried one. I can look it up on the spreadsheet. But so that was today's pocket car, the 94 tuned Supra. So we got to get some shelves on the wall so we can.
So that was your pocket car.
That was my pocket car. It's kind of clunky. So when I was cutting those ash trees, it was kind of sticking out a little bit, but
yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that would leave a little mark in your leg if you smack that with something.
Yeah, and sometimes the pocket cars turn into, like, cooler cars. Like, I'll put them in my cooler, like, when we're in the field. Actually, the one for tomorrow is absolutely massive. So that's not going to stay in my pocket at church. That'll just ride around in the truck or something. But
no, so what we have decided after our first one, so we don't have a car for the first podcast that we already recorded, but our plan is to start putting some shelves up here behind us, and the YouTube Live guys will be able to see it.
Blank wall.
And we are going to have a cast car. So this is going to be our very first cast car for episode two.
Sweet.
So we will talk about a car every podcast. Why don't we do this? If you guys have some suggestions that you would like for a cast car, go ahead and give them to us. Message us.
Yeah, if there's a specific car you want to see, I can scour my collection and see if I've got it. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that day's pocket car. It just worked out that way today. But yeah, if there's a certain type of Hot Wheels or Matchbox car you want to see, I might have it in my collection. Otherwise, I can always find it. So
if you, I'm just thinking about this, you carrying a car around for the past three years, and we're going on month three.
Yeah. Well, so 4 years to 2020, 21, 22, 23. So this is going on year five?
All of 20, all of 21, all of 22, all of 23, and we just started 24.
Okay, yeah.
So four full years.
Yep.
So I did that math wrong, because I did 3 years.
Yeah.
I want to know how many cars this is.
It's just over 1,500. I rolled 1,500 on my spreadsheet the other day. So we're up to, over 1,500 cars. So yeah, that'd be north of 5 years, going on 5 years.
If you said you had one in there that got repeated for about 10 days or so.
Yep.
So that's just over 1,500. That's crazy.
Yep. I was going to say, I think.
And all of those cars are in this house somewhere?
Not all of them. So some of them I do sell. There was a point where I was just early on in my collecting where I was just buying them for the sake of buying them. Like, I don't actually like this. Or one thing that I like to do is if I get a car that, like, reminds me of somebody, I'll, like, leave it in their house. Like, I found one that, so they do the Mario Kart cars, and I found one that was Baby Mario. That was what my sister always played as when we were kids growing up playing Mario Kart. So I found the Baby Mario one and, like, hid it in her, like, a plant in her house or something. She found it eventually. So, I mean, I don't have all 1,500, but I also have about a couple hundred more cars waiting to be carried as pocket cars. So, yeah, I'm right around the 2,000 mark, if I had to guess.
You see who's in the live there?
I do. My lovely wife, who's in the next room, actually. So
watching us.
Yeah, she's like, great.
Jared on here asked, how long does it take a company like John Deere to come out with a diecast of new models? And what I'm guessing that he's referring to is so John Deere just did a big release here last week.
Yeah, what was it?
It was the 9RX series.
Okay.
And it was, and if I believe I've got these models right there, the 710, so the 9RX 710, 770, and 830.
Okay, that was the one I kept seeing was the 830.
The 830, that's a big horse. I mean, it's almost 900 horse at peak, or so they say. So,
So how long would it take them to make that in a diecast? Wow. So I'm not clear on the... So if you go... Most of your toy tractors that you look at are going to be from the Ertl Company. They're located here in Iowa over in Dyersville. And they've changed hands. They're, I think they're no longer an Iowa company. It's the same name, but it's owned by somebody else. So I would guess that they still put out most of your John Deere toy, your John Deere toy tractors and other brands too, would be through Ertl. How long would it take them to put it out? I wouldn't think it would take that long. Within a few months,
I'm guessing they're working on it. If I mean,
it could be out already.
It could be. I haven't seen one. But
no, now I'm gonna have to look. So look for the 8, 9, 9X. What is it? What was the numbers?
9RX.
9RX. Yep. Okay, 830. Okay, yep. I'm gonna make a note of that so I remember.
Yeah, it's one of the first big horsepower tractors that has been released that doesn't have DEF.
Really?
Yep.
What was the reasoning behind that, you suppose?
They were able to make it emissions compliant without using DEF.
That's interesting.
Yep, it's. I've seen some pictures under the hood. It is just horsepower.
I would think so. Horsepower. So is that 830 horsepower? Is that how that works?
Yep, that's. Nice. But it's got a range,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know for a fact, and I could look this up pretty easily, but it's just almost 900 horse at peak power.
Wow.
So
that's insane.
Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah. I'm guessing it's only available in a quad track.
It is only available in a quad track.
Okay. Because, I mean, yeah, if you're going to get that much power to the ground, you're going to need the traction that...
It's that tractor that they released is a redesign all the way from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. It looked different from, like, the pictures and videos that I saw.
Yeah, it's got, the fuel tank is back under the cab.
Oh, okay.
And, like the hydraulic pumps and stuff, are behind the cab.
Okay.
It's very interesting, some of the things that they moved around, but all new cab, all new, I mean, everything. There's nothing on that tractor that they reused. Mm. Maybe the mirrors, maybe.
You'd think there's got to be a few parts that they could carry over, but, I mean, maybe not when you're going completely new, like a brand new style model, because you think tractors and most of your farm equipment, it's not like your over-the-road vehicles where, you know, every year they come out with a different model and new styling, like, all right, this is your whatever generation of F-150, you know, so there's going to be some changes. You know, a lot of your farm equipment will go years, if not decades, without major changes. So yeah, for them to come out and do something like that, it'd be pretty groundbreaking, especially with that much horsepower and everything.
So I just looked this up, first thing that popped up. Guess how much that tractor weighs?
Oh, gosh. You want it in tons or?
Pounds.
Pounds, oh, gosh. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of just an educated guess. Like, because you look at the stuff and we work on the stuff. It's like, what does this actually weigh? Oh,
so I'll give you maybe a marker. So the top of the track is over 6 feet tall.
Okay, and we're both about six, so it'd be taller than us just from the track.
Correct.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. I'm going to sound really stupid here, so I'm trying to think. 50,000 pounds?
Oh. 50,000?
50. I don't know. I'm taking a real stab. You're going to tell me how far off I am.
Well, you want to know what's hilarious is...
Did my wife guess correctly?
She's 1,000 pounds off.
No way.
She guessed 85,000. It's 84,000.
Oh, so by... Oh, she went over Price Right rules. Sorry, honey. You're going to wake the baby. She's yelling from the other room. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. So... The 830, and this is right off of John Deere's website, is it's 913 peak horsepower.
Okay.
It's
how many horses per pound is that? Do that math.
Okay.
What was it? So
it was 84,000 pounds.
84,000 pounds.
And you can add ballast weights to that.
Oh yeah.
So you can put a chin strap and rear tank weights by the drawbar on that and make it heavier yet.
And 913 horses.
So 84,000 divided by 9, that, and that's peak, so 913. That's, I did that math way wrong.
Did you multiply? Nah. 6 billion.
I don't know what button I pushed, but it was, it said 9.
So it'd come in somewhere around, rough math,
92.
Yeah.
92 point a lot of repeating numbers.
pounds per horsepower.
That's, yeah, so 92 pounds per, and that's peak horsepower. So if you did rated, so if you did 84,000 divided by 830 at rated engine, that's 101 pounds.
I don't know why I asked that. Nobody ever needs to know that. Nobody goes to the dealership, well, how many pounds per horsepower? It's like, nobody, I just wanted to see
what that was. That was probably some of the most useless information that nobody will listen to.
Hey, now we know. Next time we're out and about talking to some of our other, did you know, you see that new deer? It's got 92 pounds per horsepower. So what's a unit like that cost? Any idea? Because I remember when they came out with some of them, the idea was it cost you, what did they say, like $1,000 per horsepower. You know, if it was, so if it was like a 9540 or, I don't even know if that's a model, but if something like that, so it costs you $540,000. So,
well, I don't know. I could take an educated guess.
There's no cost. There's no buy now on John Deere's website or anything.
It's a 25 model year tractor. Okay. So you might see a few this year in testing, but you won't be able to buy one until next year.
Sure.
You can order them now.
Right.
But by the time, so there, I'm sure there's got to be a price out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it would not surprise me if that tractor's over $1 million.
Yeah, I could see that. Just the way the price is on equipment, everything right now, it would not surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Wow. Well, so if you're saying $1,000 per engine horse, I mean, that's close.
Yeah, you're getting there.
And I mean, I know there's a lot of options that you can get. So the, for those of you that might be even slightly interested, it has an 18-liter engine in it, and it is a, it has a power shift. It is not the power shift that is in, it's not the same power shift that's in their big tractors.
Okay, so it's all new gear system.
It is all new. It's called an E21, and so it has 21 forward gears. It has 11 reverse gears.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
So, max speed, and this is on tracks, mind you, max speed is 25 miles per hour, which is cooking right along.
Hauling the mail, yeah.
And then they've got so many different, they've got, I mean, you can put PTOs on it, you can put hydraulic stacks. I think they've got 3 or 4 hydraulic options for flow. I know, I could see them being pretty popular. John Deere also released a new air cart. And so,
air cart.
Yep, for seeding small grains.
Sure, yep.
And I could see that being a popular combination.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got big fans on those, I know, for seed delivery, and their 80, 90, 100, 110-foot drills or whatever they pull out and out west there in the, you know, their fields that are 4 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that being, you know, a pretty big combination. Would we see one of those around our area? Probably not.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Right away. How fast could you pull your 15-foot ripper with one of those?
It's 12-foot.
Oh,
to be. Yeah.
How many? Okay, so we should start. How many horses do you use right now to pull your 12-foot?
Well, it's a 335R. So what is that?
So
is that 335? Okay, yeah. So, yeah, to have almost 3 times that.
And I suppose you don't have that much trouble pulling it either.
No, no. Oh, my gosh. That, you would be absolutely cooking.
Think
with
of
that
the
thing.
Fuel you'd save.
Yeah, but
think
you,
of the efficiencies.
Yeah, until you hit a softball-sized rock that's buried and the whole thing just explodes because you're going 20 miles an hour with
it. Wouldn't care, would it?
No, yeah. boy. Oh. That's a scary thought, just being able to do that. But, oh, man. That's insane.
So you guys have heard us talk a little bit. You know, we both obviously farm, and the purpose of this podcast is kind of for you guys to get to know us a little bit. So we are going to start off with our host Grant here, and we are going to
rock, crushes, scissors. So I have to go first.
We're gonna try and dive into the life of Grant here a little bit.
Give you an opportunity to interview me, I suppose.
But yeah.
you didn't know you were going to have to interview me, did you?
Do you have questions? I don't have questions.
Oh, okay. Questions? I'll just talk about myself. I'm really good at it. So, okay. So I guess, yeah, just to get to know me a little bit more. I started farming in 1995 because that's when I was born. But yeah, I just say because I've been so my I've been part of a family farm here in Iowa. I believe I always get this wrong, but I would be me and my siblings would be fifth generation that are on the farm here. So just kind of always something I wanted to do. I mean, so we've been friends. We were trying to figure out how long you and I have been friends. I think I want to say it's when we started playing baseball together in like first grade because we were either fighting to play right field or on the bench. Neither of us was very good at it.
Yeah, it took us a little while. I think we eventually got better at our roles, but we were outfielders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. For
and,
sure.
And you and everybody that ever played baseball knows that that's where you put the prime talents
in the outfield. Oh, yeah. A lot of second base and stuff like that. But but so, yeah, we both kind of grew up just as farm kids, but very different. We'll get to hear Chris's story at some point. But so, yeah, just kind of growing up in the small town, wanting to farm. It's always something I just knew I wanted to do. So I went to high school here with our graduating class was 123. So I'm sure, like, there's towns out there. Well, even my wife's was only 60 or whatever. You know, mine was 5, and they were all related to me. It's like, okay, great. You know, there's always smaller towns out there. But so ours was 123.
I can't remember. I know that the number we started high school with was a lot bigger than what we graduated with.
It was over 150. I know that.
There was a lot of people that moved.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. There were some that came, but there was a lot that left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I think our town's a decent sized town, but we are, you know, we're fortunate. We got some businesses coming in, and, you know, we're on the river, so we got water, but, you know, because that was a big thing back in the day. But fun fact, though, so our town, Charles City, Iowa, it was the birthplace of the modern American tractor. So it was founded in, I don't know when, I should know as many times as we've been through the museum in town on field trips and stuff, but that was where the tractor was actually founded.
The company was White Farm, is what it was called, and they tore the building down. We could make an entire podcast out of that.
And we might have to. I think it would actually be great to interview, because everybody in this town, from like our grandpa's generation all the way even up to like our dad's, you know, everybody in that generation, because the plant closed in like sometime in the 80s or 90s, probably the 80s with the farm crisis.
I know that, you know, all the local farmers here, I think if you go into any farm shop around here, there's pieces of White Farm or in those shops.
You know, White's, Oliver's, you know, they were all kind of in succession. We never made like Minneapolis Moline's because they were all kind of under the same umbrella, but I believe it was Oliver's for a while, and then it went to White Farms in like the 70s until they closed in the 80s. Yeah, we should do more research on that. That'd be a great podcast, but just talking to guys that worked in the tractor plant and all this and that. So kind of gives you a little insight about the town that we were growing up in, about 7,000-8,000 people.
Yeah, I think we're right around the 7,000, I think.
And
right
we've now. Been there for a while. You know, we're just kind of maintaining,
but
which
we've
is...
got. We've got a chicken plant, and we've got a couple I don't know if you
tire
call
plant.
Them. We've got a tire plant. We got a camper plant. Mm-hmm. We've got two big plants that make vet supplies and pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
And I mean that without all of them, I mean
They're the big businesses.
They're
in town.
The big businesses. I mean, not saying they're the only businesses, but they're the big ones.
Because we're kind of that kind of happy place of like, you know, we've got the businesses, so you know you kind of got your town folks, but then a lot of it has to do with the nearby farmers, the agriculture. So that's just kind of the area that we grew up in here. So went to high school, graduated, and thanks to our high school ag teacher, he was very big on like, hey, you're going to take these classes. They call them dual credits. You can get college credits for them while you're in high school. So I did, by the time I graduated high school, I had about 20 credits, which is almost a year's worth of college already paid for just because I paid attention in these, you know, higher, they weren't anything. You took most of them. They weren't anything too terrible.
They really weren't. No. I think I took the majority of them with you, and then, because mm-hmm. we were going to go on the same career path in college, and then somewhere along that line, I took a left turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, I don't know. I was born with a wrench in my hands, so.
Yeah, there you go. You left me at the stoplight. You cruised through the light, and I wasn't sure.
Yep, farmer stop.
Yeah. But so I had all those credits, so I did 1 year at the local community college, NIAC, go Trojans. By the time I got to Iowa State the next year, I had enough credits racked up between high school and 1 year community college that I was able to get my four-year degree in just 3 years. Save some time and some money just to get back to the farm. So my degree, they called it agricultural studies, which was kind of just for the guys and gals that like, hey, either I don't know what I want to do, I just want to do something ag related, or I want to go home and farm. And I had people ask me like, why did you go to college? You know, did you have to? And I've often thought about that. You know, I could have got more experience just being back on the farm. It's like, okay, there was 2 years there where, you know, I was off at college. I was in Ames, but I was coming home about every weekend to farm while in college. So I was able to get my four-year degree in just 3 years, gain some experience, learn some stuff. You know, while I might have missed out on some experience here at the farm, but I did learn a lot in college. So it was a good time. I don't regret going.
Is there any classes at Iowa State that you wish you could have or would have taken now looking back after you've been? What have we've been out of school for 12 years, 10 years?
Yeah, going on. This is going on 11 years of high school, but then, yeah, so I graduated Iowa State in 2016. As far as classes goes, one thing I do wish I would have done is, so the way the agricultural studies works is you cover all your bases, and then there's like 30 credits left to do whatever you want. So like if you want to take a dance class, you want to get a history minor, I did take a dance class and a couple history classes, but you know, I kind of wish I would have just taken more of those to just kind of expand that bubble a little bit. Yeah, I took economics and agronomy and things that would actually serve me being on the farm, but it's like, you know, there was probably some other classes I could have taken as well. I wish I would take more animal science classes. There was a beef cattle, like feedlot management one I wasn't able to take just because it wouldn't fit into my schedule. But I do think that the classes I did take, especially like the economics ones, ag law, that's a big one for somebody in that degree field. Learned a lot there about just like taxes. Now I know what like negligence is and stuff like that, because it's kind of just a entry level law class specifically related to kind of agriculture and like land, well, taxes, but also like, yeah, lease agreements, things like that. So that was, it was tough to sit through, but I actually did learn quite a bit from it. So,
well, that gives you an upper hand on the, you know, because you have your own ground, so your family farm with your dad.
Yep.
Well, your parents, I guess. And so you have your own ground that you rent yourself.
Yep. So between me and my dad, we farm about 1,400 acres. I'm sure if you're listening to this, yeah, some people have more, some people have less. You know, that's just where we're at. So a majority of that, he does own some, but he does rent some out as well. And then I rent out about 300 acres. And some of that actually started a neighbor family came to me while we were still in high school and said, hey, we'd like to rent you this chunk of ground, help out the neighbor guy who was living there at the time. You know, really gracious. You know, I can't say enough about the families in our area. You know, not even the ones that have rented to me, but the ones that rent to my brother or just other, like, hey, I want a young farmer to take this over. It really gives guys opportunities because farming is not, it's very different from a lot of your other businesses as far as like trying to get in and get your foot in the door and get started and be successful and actually have a chance at, you know, creating a honest living for yourself. So the opportunities were definitely there, and they've continued to be there, and I'm super grateful to all those people who've given me those opportunities to farm and to kind of expand my own operation alongside my dad. So
yeah, but I mean, if you ask the internet, it's easy.
Oh yeah,
all you do is you put the seed in the ground, and then you go on vacation for 4 months.
Yeah,
and
yep.
You tell the local guy to take care of it, and then you come back and you combine it. And then you go on vacation again for 4 more months. Just ask the internet. That's what they say.
Oh, yeah. You believe everything you read on the internet?
No.
I would hope not. We might not have been friends this long. Good Lord. But, yeah, it's definitely a very different business. It's a whole another can of worms from, I mean, I've never found anything like it. But, I mean, so, yeah, it's been where I've been my entire life. It's always been something I wanted to do, you know. And people would ask, you know, did you always want to farm? Did you feel like you're forced to come back? It's like, no, this is what I wanted to do. And I'm just thankful that the opportunity was there to do it. So I've been back home on the farm, like I said, since 2016. Met my lovely wife in 2018. We got married in 21. So we've been together, and she's been helping me just kind of run the operation as well, as much as she can. We'll have to get her on the podcast at some point, because her story of, you know, she hadn't grew up with no agriculture background whatsoever. So to bring her out from Minnesota down here to Iowa and be like, all right, here's what I do. You in? And she said yes. And we've been here and with one little girl and one more on the way. So we're making it work, and we're having a good time doing it.
Yep. You brought her down from hot dish country.
No, that's what I tell her. It's like, when we go up to visit her family in Minnesota, I will say Quick Trip. I will say Hot Dish. I will call it Duck Duck Gray Duck, as much as it hurts me to say it.
What in the world is a gray duck?
So it is literally only the state of Minnesota that calls it Duck Duck Gray Duck. Everyone else calls it Duck Duck Goose. Like, you know, the game kids play?
Yeah. It's
Duck Duck, Duck Goose. But in Minnesota, only Minnesota, it is Duck Duck Gray Duck. I have no idea why.
They're wrong.
I know. 49 other states can't be wrong. But so, like, we go up there, like, I will call it whatever you want. But when we are down here, when we are at home, you're making a tater tot casserole. You're going to get milk at the Quick Star. And when our kids will call it Duck Duck Goose. I don't care.
The Quick Trip and the Quick Star thing, that, so for those of you that may or may not know, it, in Iowa, mm-hmm. It is a Quick Star.
Right.
But in
the chain of gas stations,
in Minnesota and Wisconsin, it is a Quick Trip.
Okay.
It is the same store.
Exact same. Looks it the same.
The same.
Yeah. But I think there's something like there's already a different type of Quick Trip in Iowa or something. So they had to change the name or I don't know. But
I have no idea the background of Quick Star.
Yeah.
Which is the proper name for it.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. But yeah, so that's, I give her a hard time for that, but she takes it in stride. So like I said, we'll get her on the podcast in the future, kind of give the.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be hard. She's on the other side of this wall.
Exactly. Probably watching Game of Thrones without me, but that's all right. That's all right. But
it's okay. I've got it all on DVD.
Okay.
Gotcha covered.
Good. I guess I could give a little history too on the diecast like car collecting, because this is in fact the diecast ranch on all social media platforms. I started, you know, everybody had Hot Wheels when they were a kid. Like
still do.
Exactly. Yeah. I've met a lot of guys who it's like, yeah, they've been doing this for a while, probably longer than I've been alive, and good for them. But so it would have been, I just gotten out of college actually, because it was. Around about Easter time, it was over the river in Illinois. There was a big car. They were doing a classic car auction. Like, okay, I just graduated college. I got a little bit of money. I'm going to kind of do something for me. And I'm going to go buy like a classic car, like an old muscle car or something. You know, I'm partial to like the Mopars, your Dodges and your Plymouths. And this sale was massive. And they had like a Barrett Jackson, like, hey, the real fine stuff, or hey, here's some trucks and some vans and some projects. I'm like, well, I could spend a few thousand dollars, buy a project, you know, and see how that goes. So a buddy, I picked up a buddy of mine along the way. We went down there. He was looking for something as well. And it just blew my mind how much these vehicles were going for. I mean, I can't remember specifics, but I mean, if anybody's in the classic car market, you know, prices have absolutely skyrocketed in the last 5 to 10 years, especially for Chrysler products. I don't know why, but I mean, you know, and you've got your Camaros, your Mustangs, everybody loves them. Your Corvettes, they're always going to love them. They're high priced, but even for completely roached and rusted out projects were five figures. It's like, okay, I had a little bit of money, but not that much. So kind of went back home with my tail between my legs. And at the time, that's when Toys R Us's were closing down. I don't know why, but in my journey back home, I stopped in and they, you know, 80% off everything. And so I went and looked at like some Lego and some Hot Wheels. And I was like, hey, I can't afford the big cars, so I might as well start buying the little ones. And I just kind of kept buying and collecting. And it just kind of snowballed from there. Kind of went from your everyday $1 cars that you'd see at every store in America to, I actually just picked one up the other day for, I believe it was $40 for a singular car. But I do have a few in my collection that are, I bought for that, but I know they're worth upwards of like $100 and stuff. So yeah, I need to get them on display. They don't deserve to be sitting in boxes.
You need to get little cases, little glass cases for these cars.
Yeah. I mean, there are some that are, there's some just out there in the world that it's like, you're telling me that thing's worth thousands of dollars because it was a certain year or a certain color, or, you know, they only made a few of them. It's like, that's bananas. And I don't ever plan to get there. What I lack in maybe the expensive ones I make up for in quantity. I did hear an interesting fact the other day that there are several million collectors nationwide, and each one, the average collection size is 1,500 cars. So I know I'm bringing the average up, but the
average is 1,500.
1,500 cars. Yep. But you think about that, like 1,500 cars, you can get all that in like a standard like 24 quart tote. I mean, they don't take up a lot of space. And you think of the millions of cars, just Hot Wheels, who are owned by Mattel, that they, well, and Matchbox too. How many cars that they put out in a year? And then you've got your other brands. There's brands out there that I've never even heard of, but you know, they're all making these little toy cars. It's the simplest toy. It's all by itself. You don't need nothing else. It's not like Lego or even like G.I. Joe's or something else that, you know, it's its own thing. So, I mean, it's the most successful toy of all time. And I think for good reason. So I've just always kind of loved collecting them. It's built up, it's grown, and I'm just kind of known as that, the car guy in our friend group and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where that went. And like I said, I started the pocket car thing in 2020. I don't know if I'll ever stop that. I mean, during the COVID times, things were with the problems with things getting shipped to stores. They were a little hard to come by. It's hard to buy cars when you can't go to the stores. But I made it through that. So despite the, they're trying to keep me down, but I made it through. So,
well, there's two things that you can always count on if you ever run into you anywhere, is you're going to have an orange hat on, you're going to have a car in your pocket.
Yep. Yep. You got me this orange hat.
I did get you that orange hat.
It's my favorite. I couldn't find it the other day. I'm like, I got to find my orange hat.
But I just about threw one of your orange hats on in the entryway there. You had three or four of
them. Oh, the ones we had made for our wedding. Yep. Yeah. You should have your own. What are you taking mine for?
Mine's on a shelf, man.
All right. Keep it. Yeah, you can have one of my spares to actually,
it's a showpiece,
wear out and enjoy. So yeah, that's kind of my background as far as farming goes. I mean, I guess goals for the future would kind of be, so we do, I guess I didn't mention, we do run a small cow herd of about 15. I think we're somewhere in 15, 18 cow. I think right at 18 cows right now. And we feed out the calves and stuff. And that's kind of one of those where we love the cows. I would challenge anyone to find a tamer cow herd. I mean, they've, most of them were our old cow calf projects that we take to the fair. So they've been on halters. They are super tame, super calm. We can go out. I mean, my 18-month-old walks around the cow lot with us, and she doesn't get close to them because, I mean, but, you know, we can comfortably go out there with her, and they are just super friendly. I'd say they'd follow you off a cliff or an ear of corn. I mean, they're so easy to be around. But we talked about maybe expanding the herd a little bit, but it's kind of one of those things where it's already a pretty big time and time investment, and, you know, it's just kind of nice to keep the herd small, keeps the workload down a little bit. So we'll probably kind of keep them where they are. Well, I mean, we'll always have cows. Whether or not we feed out the calves or what that building setup looks like could change, but for right now, we'll hang on to the cow herd and keep raising those calves. But, you know, it'd always be good to kind of expand the farming operation. I know it's, for those of you that are in agriculture, specifically the crop farming, you know, it's can kind of be a cutthroat business between, you know, you got your BTOs and your big farmers that can kind of throw their weight around and scoop up all the ground. But, you know, there are opportunities out there if you kind of keep at it, keep working hard, and make relationships with your neighbors and, you know, people who could maybe help you out in the future. So, I mean, my goal is not to farm the entire county. I don't need to be one of these big outfits that you see on the internet. I mean, they look like they're having fun though, but just to be able to farm enough to sustain my family and, you know, have something to pass on to future generations would be great. But, you know, if that's my plan, we'll see if what the good Lord has in store for me and our operation. But for right now, I think we're doing good. So just kind of keep doing our thing and expanding a little bit here and there and see what we can do with the time that we got.
Yeah. And you know, you're not in this alone exactly. I mean, mm-hmm. Your dad still works next to you or with you every day or you work next to him, maybe I should say.
Yeah. If anybody's ever worked with family, you know, it can be the most rewarding thing, but it can also be one of the most frustrating things. And it all depends on the day and what you're doing. I mean, there's times where he's ticked off at me and I'm hollering at him, but at the end of the day, you can still sit down for lunch on Sunday or get together at Christmas. And it's like, okay, we're all family here. You know, yeah. it all works out in the end. You know, we get along just fine. I'm glad we do. 'Cause I know there's outfits out there where it's unfortunate that, you know, people get upset over stuff and it kind of puts a bad taste in people's mouth, but no, we get along just fine. So
yeah, there's nothing, I don't think there can be anything more frustrating than, you know, if you're working with anyone that's related or anything like that, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden they just don't, I don't know what they might may or may not hear, and all of a sudden it's just not working.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yep. So, in the live here,
mm-hmm.
Jared, he said, he totally understands what it's like running a business with his father.
So. Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like farming kind of adds that extra, like,
some
spice. But I mean, yeah, if you're running any sort of business with family, whether it's a flower shop with your mom or a online candle business with your brother, like, it's gonna be
this goes good way way beyond farming.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it could be possibly a little more, because, you know, farming, we're not just working. You don't clock in at 9 o'clock and clock out at 5.
Nope.
And so, you know, when you're some of these other businesses, like you say, like example, a flower shop, you might not really care as much because you know that there is a clock at the end of the day that you get to be separated from them. And time apart is good time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but yeah, that goes way beyond farming. And like you say, it is super thankful to be working with who you can,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and that goes also a long ways, where I once heard that you want to pick something that you would do for free and make it your career.
Ooh, I like that.
And that is something that I think about often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, farming is not for everybody. I mean, you have got to absolutely love it and be willing to dive headfirst in no matter what goes on. I mean, the amount of risk involved, I actually just wrote down for another video idea, like, you know, 10 ways that farming is different from other jobs. You know, the risk involved, the physical harm that's even involved,
yeah.
You know, all that can weigh on a guy or gal. you know, mentally, physically. I mean, it's just crazy. So yeah, to be, you gotta love it. I mean, like, I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs or people who have started businesses, like, why do you do it? Why do you put yourself through the ringer day after day, year after year? Because you gotta love doing it.
There's, a lot of things that people wouldn't even think about.
Mm-mm.
You know, not being in the industry, like, when you're sitting there waiting for a market report to come out,
mm-hmm.
I know so many people, and me included, sometimes it doesn't affect me as much as it would per se you, but I mean, they don't sleep
mm-hmm.
days.
Yep.
I mean, you're just sitting there waiting for that, you know, is this going to affect me which way, up or down?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we going to be able to, because if it goes too far, it's going to be a problem.
Right.
And, and then so many unanswered questions that you just have to put in the back of your head and go to bed with and mm-hmm. wake up and think about them all the next day with no answers in sight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
drive a man insane. It will.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. I know when I first started like marketing my own grain, just trying to be like, okay, you wake up in the morning, I think I might sell some corn today. Oh, it rained in Brazil, you know, halfway around the world, got some rain, and now all of a sudden your crop's worth 50 cents less than it was yesterday. Well, that was the difference between you hitting your break even or not, like making money this year or not. It's like, oh man, that's a hard pill to swallow. You know, it's a hard lesson to learn, but you figure it out eventually, and you get up and you keep doing it.
There's nothing, you know, there's nothing that will make a farmer talk more about or bring up more than if he sits there and says, I'm going to sell this load. You know, I've got a load of corn to sell, or I've got 10 loads of corn to sell, and I'm going to sell it. And he sits there and he doesn't do it.
Yep.
And the next day it goes down like 25 cents, and he will bring that up forever.
Yep.
Like, oh, I remember this one time I was going to sell 10 loads, and I just went down, and I still got them 10 loads. Never did sell them.
Yeah, or I should have sold it right out of the field, and now here I am, it's March, and
yep.
It was worth more in October.
That's just
like, I didn't want to wait in line.
That's just like talking about the rainstorm that missed a guy, you know.
Yeah.
Supposed to rain, it went 2 miles south. It's like, oh, it never rains here.
Yeah.
You're true. It's true.
Yeah, it's insane the amount of stuff that we deal with, but at the same time, it's like I think of, like, you know, my grandpa's generation. So he was born in the 20s, you know, in the thick of like the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and plowing with horses. And it's like I complain when my headset doesn't connect right away, so I can listen to tunes in the cab, my air conditioned, climate controlled 300 horsepower cab, and it's like, oh man, I got nothing compared to what some of those guys went through.
What a different life that it
was. Oh my gosh. I mean, we could do a whole episode on that. Oh, just how it's changed over the last few years. Talk to some old timers and, you know, things that have changed for the good and for the bad in our industry. So
yeah, I mean, that, you know, just think, was it 50, 60 years ago? I mean, you think what technology was back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what technology?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right? And now, if you've got the dough to buy it, your tractor will turn around on the end. Mm-hmm. You don't even touch anything.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the John Deere's newest tractor, but the technology that comes with it, I mean, it's insane. And it seems to change every day. Every year they're rolling out some new software, some new guidance system, some new something or other that's going to make things a little bit easier.
Yeah, so that new quad track that they released, 830 horse or 913 peak horsepower.
Mm.
And my grandpa's, one of his first tractors was, God, I'm going to get the year wrong. I'm pretty sure it's a 1936.
That'd be an A?
Model B.
Oh, B. Okay.
It has a rating of 16 horsepower.
And at the time, that was a lot. That was
like the main farm tractor.
Top notch.
That, I mean, he brings that up all the time. He goes, I've plowed this field with that tractor so many times I couldn't even count them.
Yeah.
And that tractor still runs today.
Yeah.
Still has it.
Yeah.
We've got that one, and which is an unstyled B, and we also have, which I was lucky enough to acquire with him, is a 40. It's a 40s, 1940s styled Model A.
Okay.
And that one actually has electric start.
Ooh.
That Model B is a hand start.
Yep, I remember that.
So if you wanted to run that thing, you had to put the effort into it.
Just to start the thing.
But, yeah, it's just, you think about it. So model year 25 is going to have a 900 horse tractor for John Deere. And that 36 or 37 or whatever year that Model B is, I should know because it's tattooed on my arm.
Yeah,
I should know the year of that tractor.
Roll it up. I'll read it for you.
Yeah, it's not on there, but geez. It's
okay.
Got the...
Oh, the tractor.
I got the picture of the tractor on it.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah,
so in 100 years, going from literal horses to 900 and some under the hood of one rig.
Yep, it would be really cool to get those two tractors next to each other to see the size difference.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, that Model B, I can walk up to the rear tire and rest my arms on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that big, but, you know, he's got a two bottom John Deere plow, a trip plow, no hydraulics, no fancy switch. You turned around and pulled a rope.
Yep. Like a man.
And, that thing would just putt, putt, putt all day with that thing.
Yep.
We get it out every couple of years just to kind of play with it. You know, at this point, it's not... You're not going to go work a 40 with it or anything. You'd be out there forever. And, you know, in the prime of that thing was the most efficient way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was potentially the least efficient way to do things.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, we play with it in the sweet corn patches, and it's just fun to do that. I mean, what, so... We could get into your, like, kind of with the die-cast stuff. So your dad still has his, is it his high school car?
Yeah, so his, I believe he had a 71 Charger when he graduated high school, and he has a 74 that is still on the property. I believe that's the one he drove back and forth when he went to college in the late 70s, early 80s. We still have it in... Various states of decay.
It's not currently running.
No. And we actually had had a guy up in Minnesota that said he was willing to work on it. We actually cut it out of the weeds, but we got to looking. And I believe my mom actually drove it up until the 90s sometime. I think it was before I was born. But then it got into a little bit of a fender bender, and they parked it. Well, the thing kind of sunk in the ground to the point where the floor pans are in the dirt. And just talking with the guy, and he's like... You're talking a lot of body work there for a car with a ton of, you know, sentimental value, but, you know, it's not very many options, small V8, not really a desirable car.
It's not, it doesn't have a lot of value outside of its personal value.
Exactly.
Which, so, I mean, would it be cool to see that thing go again? Absolutely it would.
Yeah. But the time and effort needed to do it is kind of... The lemon's not worth the squeeze.
There's another... Is that car here, out back yet? That sitting out by the corn crib?
My grandpa's mail truck, yeah.
Yeah.
His Ram Charger from the early 80s. He delivered mail for about 10 years, I think, just around here. So he had one of those Dodge Ram Charger SUVs, and we still have that on the property, too. Same deal. It's not worth really fixing. Two-wheel drive, small V8.
It's got a cool factor to it, though.
It's got super cool. But
I bet you've got a Hot Wheels of it.
I do not. Hot Wheels has not made a Ram Charger yet. I keep sending them letters that they need to make one. There is some other brands that do, and I'm still trying to get my hands on one.
Did you know you could custom order one? You can build a car.
What now? How am I just hearing about this?
You should be able to order a car. I've read this. I have not looked into it, so you could make a liar out of me.
Okay. I will be looking into this.
Where's our fact checker? We need a fact checker.
Yeah, have my wife in here. Demand her around, make her check facts for us. I'm sure she'd love that.
So I seen this, and I'm not going to say that it wasn't on TikTok, actually, of they took pictures and dimensions of a car or a pickup, and they made a diecast of it.
Okay. I know a lot of guys just in the Hot Wheels community that I've met, specifically through my TikTok page, they do some amazing customs and stuff, but... yeah, Hot Wheels has not come out with... There's a lot of stuff. I've made videos about cars that they need to make castings of that they just haven't. But, I mean, so that's a question I would get a lot on my diecast page. It's like, hey, do you have a 07 Chevy 3500 dually that's lower? It's like, no, they just didn't make it. You know, they haven't made every car. Do you have an 06 Toyota Corolla or a 09 Ford Ranger with two hubcaps? It's like... No, I know a guy that could probably make you one, but yeah, there's a lot of cars that they haven't made, but there's a lot of cool ones that they have that I'm still trying to find.
There is one car that I know for a fact that you have.
Probably because you gave it to me.
And it is a white Toyota truck with a gray camper body on it.
It is sitting right up there on that shelf.
Hey, I see it. Look at that.
That was a Matchbox one. I wanted to find it. I never could. And you were out to the Walmart with another buddy of ours. Like, hey, you need anything? You sent me a picture. I'm like, I need that. That's the only one I've seen. Not a super desirable car. I just never found it.
If I remember correctly, that was just a text message. Like, hey, are you looking for any kind of cars? And I was just gazing at the Hot Wheels. I'm looking for a white pickup with a gray camper box on it. It was the first car right in the center of the display. It's like this one?
Yeah, so if you're obsessed with Hot Wheels hunting like I am, it helps to have buddies that will send you pictures, send Snapchats when they're into the Walmart. Every time my wife goes to the dollar store, I'll be like, hey, you mind scooting down the toy aisle? And she'll be like, yeah, still FaceTime me. Like, you need anything? Well, let's look here. No, I'm all right. But
so. That's pretty cool. There's not a lot of wives that'll do that, you know.
No, she's amazing in so many ways. So many ways. But well, I suppose we could sit here and ramble about farming and Hot Wheels all night. But, I mean, we've already topped out an hour, so.
Yeah, we're trying to keep the podcast right around an hour, and we're just getting the live is ahead of this.
Okay.
And
we're still working out some kinks and some bugs, but I'd say we're running smoothly.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys will have to tell us if you disagree.
But. We would. So we are going to start winding this down here. We're at at an hour, so we would love to hear from each and every one of you, and please go like and subscribe to our pages. And we want to hear ideas, and we want this YouTube live chat that we've got going on tonight was fantastic. There was a few of you in there, and it was good to read some of your comments. And if we didn't get to your comment, we did read it, especially you, Andrew.
And yeah, I would like to think that, you know, we can sit in here in the future. We get enough people that are interested in the lives that we can just shoot an entire episode just BSing with you guys, shooting us comments, answering your questions. You know, sit here for 3-4 hours and just let her rip.
We would love to do a Q&A, and we might, if we get to that point, we might hopefully get to do that. So the plan is our next podcast 3, is going to be more or less the same as this one. We're just going to reverse the roles.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys are going to get to know a little bit more about me.
Who is Chris? Let's put Chris on the couch.
I don't know if it will be as interesting as Mr. Grant here. He's lived a pretty wonderful life.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it interesting.
Garrett says, keep going on the podcast. Well, we sure hope
to. We're
going to
try.
We sure hope to.
Try our hearts out. Look out, Joe Rogan. We're coming for you.
Oh, God. So I give, make sure you look for our next podcast. And I would say I think we're going to try and hit this pretty heavily. So this time last week is when we recorded our first one.
Mm-hmm.
So if our schedules can kind of work out, we're going to do more of the same here in 7 more days or so. And
consistently releasing shows, but we'll keep putting out content on, you know, you've put out some YouTube videos. I know you got a couple in the works along with the TikToks and the Instagrams.
I was supposed to have 3 YouTube videos out by the time this come out.
Come on, man.
My SIM card crashed.
Oh, no.
I lost 5 whole videos of content.
No.
So I have... you have no idea how sad I was.
I've accidentally deleted like a few minutes worth of videos, and that hurts. But I can't imagine what days of content
it was. And I was just doing, you know, a day per video. It was 10, 15, 20 minutes long.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I went to upload. I had 2 videos totally edited, and that's not...
That's time. Yeah, it takes time to edit.
My first video, now granted, I'm not a wizard at it, and I did it on my phone because I didn't have a computer to do it on. It took me 3 hours.
Oof.
For a 10-minute video.
Ugh.
I mean, there is all these guys that edit these 45-minute videos. I'd hate to know. And the effects, you know, my videos are boring.
But you...
And the effects and stuff that they've got on there, I wouldn't even fathom how long it takes them. Days.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. But yeah, it was super sad. I had the video of us setting this up.
Yeah.
We set this room up and we filmed it and we were going to put it on YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
Gone.
Well, and I was going to record putting up the soundproofing that kept falling on us last week, but my wife went ahead and did it while I was working today. So can't even make a video of that, but nope, that's all right. The fact that she got it up is better than the video I would have made.
I do think that it sounds better in here now.
And it's not falling on us.
It's not. It has not a single one. So yeah. She obviously did it way better than us.
I'll take notes on how to edit videos from some guy, some dude.
Yeah.
I bet he knows how to edit videos.
Hey, that guy knows how to edit videos.
But more on him later.
So we do have a channel sponsor that we're going to shout out, MW Ag Custom Ag Services.
Oh, of course.
They so graciously have donated all of this equipment that we're using.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
We're
no slouches. We got the arms and everything.
I know it. So based out of Clarksville and... We got to get some kind of organization to this, but check them out on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I think we're going to kind of end the podcast here.
Yep. Like and follow at the Diecast Ranch on TikTok, Instagram, and the YouTube. I'm Grant, also the Orange Track Farmer on TikTok and Instagram. And
I'm Chris, and we appreciate you listening, and tune in next time.
See you next time.